Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about issues that are important to for our faith day by day. And one of the goals in this program is to find ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life. And so we can, in fact, connect faith to life. And one who's helped us do that over the years as we've had opportunity to talk with him is Jed Medefin. Jed is the father of five children, and he serves as president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. But prior to that, he served in the White House under President George W. Bush, leading the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. He's authored four books, including Upended and Four Souls, and his most recent book, Becoming Home, offers a short yet meaningful exploration of how families and communities can embrace vulnerable children with wisdom and love through adoption, foster care, mentoring, and more. And Jed and his wife, Rachel, live with their children in Central California, and we're honored to have him back with us on Connecting Faith because we want to talk about a very special event going on soon. Jed, welcome. First of all, good to talk to you again.
Great. Thank you, Neil. It's great to be with you again.
This later this week, there's going to be thousands of committed Christians and caring adults gathering in Nashville to discuss orphans, adoption, foster care, and global initiatives. It's all part of the latest summit from the Christian Alliance for Orphans. So maybe we need to define what the CAFO is and what this summit is all about.
That's right. We are really excited about the upcoming, we call the summit or the CAFO 2015, and it's been going on for the last decade, and each year more believers from across the U.S. and around the world have come together to ask the question, how can the church be God's answer for orphans? Whether we're talking about children growing up in Africa without families or kids in our local foster care that need mentors or foster families or in some cases adoption. And so really it's a gathering to learn how to do that wisely and well with the local church at the center and responding to these kids and really being the hands and feet of Christ to children that are growing up without the protection and nurture of family.
Now, I know that because it's a little late as we're getting connected with you, that people probably aren't going to be, hopping a plane to Dallas or to Nashville and driving. But is there a way that people can find out more? Let's just talk about some of the details right up front, or at least to do some follow-up. Will there be some sessions posted online or any of those kinds of things?
That's right. So CAFO 2015 is the website, CAFO2015.org. And folks can go in there and look and see, what all the content that is there. It would at least be there in general terms. And then there will be certain sessions that will be streamed live. So folks could check on the timing of that. And certainly, we'd welcome, of course, we would allow walk-ups. But if folks, of course, can't make it to Nashville, they can at least catch little parts of it online.
Say a little bit just about the Christian Alliance for Orphans. I mean, you mentioned this summit has been going on for a decade or so, but this is really a pretty unique ministry.
It really is, Neil. So often Christian ministries, while they're doing great work, can work in isolation from each other or even in competition. And what the Alliance represents, the Christian Alliance for Orphans, is a coming together of about 180 different ministries that are all serving orphans and vulnerable children, some in the U.S., some globally, some through adoption, but now through the Alliance, all working in unison to both inspire and then equip the church to effectively act for orphans. And so it's just beautiful to see these ministries putting their logos and egos to the side and joining together in a vision that's larger than any one of us to really see the church again known as the people who defend the orphan.
Well, Jed, I want to ask you a little bit about, because I was just looking on the website and looking at on your core values statement. You made this statement. It says, God is vested deeply and personally in the plight of the orphan and in all who are destitute and defenseless. Talk a little bit about the implications of that statement. And is that something that you think the evangelical church really, really believes?
I think that at times, and particularly in the 20th century, for reasons sometimes good but often bad, we separated the clear biblical call to share the good news of the gospel from the clear biblical commands to reflect God's heart in protecting the defenseless and caring for the weak and vulnerable. And it's exciting to see. I think in the last couple decades, we've seen those two things come back together with a deep rootedness in the gospel and biblical truth, and then flowing out into a whole, you know, so many different expressions of God's heart for mercy and justice. And so this orphan care movement, the adoption and foster care, all those things, that's just an expression of that understanding that our God is the God who cares deeply for the vulnerable, for the child who cries at night with no one to comfort. He cares deeply about that child, and he calls us as his people to reflect that in our own lives and choices as well.
I just maybe just talk a little bit more about that, though, because if that is in fact true, I mean, would some people sort of cynically say, well, what does that say about God's ability or willingness to act in a world that seems overwhelmingly unjust, and that, you know, and you can give us the statistics, but there are millions of orphans and the weak and defenseless, right? So how do we rectify those two?
Yeah, Neil, I totally agree. That is something I wrestle with personally. And there's definitely some hard questions that the psalmists ask God in the book of Psalms that don't seem to be clearly answered. And these are things that I'd love to ask him someday myself when we have the privilege of kneeling before him. But at the same time, I do see that there's what is clear in Scripture is that God says, this is something I care about, and if you are called by my name, then this is going to be something that you are going to be living out. And, you know, of course, the biblical language describes us as his body on earth. And so what I just tend to continue to try to turn this question back to myself is, when I ask God, you know, where are you in this? He says, where are you to me? And so that when I open my home, whether that's through adoption, when I'm mentoring, that is his presence in the lives of those children. And, of course, I'm seeing this now, Neil, more and more all across the U.S. and in other parts of the world, too. The body of Christ being his body in very tangible, powerful ways for orphans and in other situations as well. And when I see that, it reveals to the world the heart of the God we serve.
Well, maybe just to personalize it a bit for you, when did you or how did you kind of work through that that question and become, you know, part of the answer as well, where God says, all right, if you're my child, I need you to respond in this way. What did that look like for you? Were you always passionate and caring about orphans and adoption?
You know, I really wouldn't say so. Growing up, I grew up in what overall was just a great Christian family that was really, in so many ways, reflected the love and grace of Christ. But I think that the issues of the vulnerable and orphans were just always seemed very far off. It was something we'd send money to from time to time, but wasn't something that I was directly involved with for the most part. And then right out of college, I spent a good part of a year living in different parts of the world, in Guatemala, in Russia, in India, with committed believers who are living out their faith there in their own cultures. And in so many of those cases, those local believers were really seeking to love and serve the orphans of their community, because that was one of the biggest challenges. That it just seems like whenever there is deep struggle, it's the children who bear the brunt of that. And so it's the church in those places that was stepping up. And I saw this happening, and I saw these precious kids growing up on the streets or in orphanages and just desperate for affection and approval. And so even though after that I ended up going into the political realm and, you know, working in the California State House and the White House, that deep, just those children's faces never left me. And so when I was coming the end of my time in the White House, my wife and I were in the process. We had just felt a sense of leading to adopt. We had two biological children, and yet we just thought, hey, we could go to the hospital and have number three, or we could give a home to a child that needs one. And so we decided to adopt. But at that same time, I was offered the opportunity to come and lead the Christian Alliance for Orphans. And I just thought, Neil, man, what could be more of a privilege than pouring my life into this beautiful vision of all these organizations working together to see the church be God's answer for orphans.
Well, we're going to break it down a little bit more and talk about orphans, orphan care, adoption, foster care, some of the global initiatives, some of the great work of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. As we talk with Jed Menefin, Jed has authored several books. He served in the White House under President George Bush. leading the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. He was working in the California legislature before that. And now he serves as president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Maybe more importantly, he and his wife Rachel have 5 children, and that's where he gets a lot of joy and spends a lot of time and effort as well. And we're talking to him today on Connecting Faith about the CAFO 2015 Summit coming up at the end of the week. We want to just highlight the great work of Christian Alliance for Orphans and the needs before us, and we'll hear more about that in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected with Jed Metafend again. Jed has been a previous guest on Connecting Faith. I always enjoy the opportunity to talk with him. He serves as the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, and he's written several books, including Upended and Four Souls and Becoming Home. It's his recent book, offering a short yet meaningful exploration of how families and communities can embrace vulnerable children with wisdom and love through adoption, foster care, mentoring, and more. Jed, give us a little sense of the scope of the need. I mean, we hear from time to time emphasis. Maybe it's an Orphan Sunday reflection, or just statistics. Obviously, we hear about refugees and all those things. But give us some sense of what do we mean by orphans? How significant an issue is this?
Yeah, well, the sweeping numbers are indeed staggering, and in fact, a lot of times. I don't feel like it's particularly helpful to just throw out the numbers, because it just causes our eyes to glaze over, our hearts to close a little bit, because we just feel like it's so overwhelming. But those numbers are the UN estimates that there's about 150 million children that have lost at least one parent. So that meets the UN definition of orphan, and about 17 million children in the world that have lost both parents. And then we also have in the U.S. foster system about 400,000 children at any given moment who've been removed from their birth family and placed into care of the state in foster care. About a quarter of those, about 100,000, need new families for adoption. They're considered waiting children. And so those are all big numbers. And yet we can also say two things. First of all, that, when you look at the number of people who are professing Christians, those numbers, the need is actually fairly small, especially when you talk about in the U.S. 100,000 kids that need adoptive families. If one family and one out of three churches adopted a child, suddenly there would be more families willing to receive children than children that need families. So that's, we can work towards that day, and we are working towards it. I think we could see it, Neil. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I would add is just, there's all these statistics. But the one statistic that matters more than any other is that it just takes one caring family to change the life of a child forever. And I see that happening over and over again.
As you alluded to just before, that the children are often the most vulnerable. And I guess if we're maybe talk globally still for a moment, the whole displacement of refugees is happening in a massive way. Talk about how vulnerable these children are, and is anyone speaking up for the children?
Well, of course, there are so many different ways to measure vulnerability, and actually, if you look at children who have been orphaned, whether losing one or especially when they lose both parents, they lose that protection and the nurture that are so essential for a child to thrive. And so when government comes in to try to fix that problem, it can provide a very important protection role. But to really thrive, what a child most needs is they need love, they need nurture, they belonging. And so that's not something government can provide. That's why we as the church need to be the answer. We can't outsource James 1:27 to government. This is God's call to us. And it really is, as you alluded to, Neil, when you look at the vulnerability of these kids, it's really, it just grabs your heart. And you see it in every way with, children who are orphans, either literally or they, for some reason, are growing up without that nurture and protection of parents. They lag behind their peers in every way. They're more susceptible to disease. They are less likely to be in school. Their physical body size is smaller. And we see this especially in the area of human trafficking, that actually kids who are growing up in the foster system make up about 60% of the victims of child trafficking here in the U.S. And we see similar things around the world, that an orphan makes the perfect target for a trafficker. And so, you know, what we need to say is, if we care about human trafficking, we really need to care for orphans.
You know, you talked about you can't outsource, love and nurture. And it reminded me that in your core beliefs or core values at the Christian Alliance for Orphans, you talk about, that the core second principle is that we respond in love, not as a duty. Explain why that's so critical in the impact that has.
Yeah, well, of course, all of us, at times have felt a motivation to help someone motivated by maybe feeling guilty. Like we've been given so much, and so, we kind of feel a guilt, or we feel a duty, just kind of a noble sense of obligation to help. And then other times we feel this idealism, like, hey, we're going to go out there and solve the world's problems. And, each of those perhaps have their place. I mean, there's a time to feel guilty if we've been callous to our neighbor, and there's a great place for idealism, thinking about solving real world problems. But ultimately, as Christians, we love because of how we had first been loved. We love because he first loved us. And so what that does is that gives us a fuel in our engine that doesn't run dry. If we're just motivated by guilt or duty or idealism, when we hit the inevitable hard things that happen, when we come into hard situations and try to love hurting people, we will experience times of disappointment, times of disillusionment, times of weariness. And guilt and duty and idealism aren't enough to carry us through that. It's only this powerful sense of how we have been loved by the Father that will carry us through that, enable us to continue to serve even when things look very dark and difficult.
Well, and I guess you would probably be the first to admit that there are things that seem dark and difficult, isn't it? I mean, adoption seems substantially challenging still, solving orphan initiatives. I mean, these aren't small problems, are they?
Not at all. Not at all. And in whichever of these realms you talk about, when you talk about people who are, serving faithfully in foster care, when you talk about people who are deeply relationally connected through mentoring, when you talk about people who are serving orphans overseas, when you talk to adoptive parents who have welcomed children in who came from wounded backgrounds, you will hear story after story of the ways in which they have opened their lives to hurt. They allow hurt into their hearts in a special way. And so there's times when they grieve over the world, so they feel some of that pain with these children. And so we need to talk about that reality, even as we also say, hey, it is so hard, and yet there is no deeper, richer way to experience God's heart, the beauty of his love for each of us, the way that his character is so devoted to the wounded child than by being a part of that with him. And it is, even though it is the hardest road I can imagine, it is also the most blessed and joyful road.
Well, we talked about some of the not simple problems, but there are signs of hope. And one of the things that I want to accomplish today during our conversation was just to invite you to share maybe just some of those stories or signs of hope, maybe. And maybe we'll just start with, global initiatives in terms of orphan care. What comes to mind when you think about hopeful signs or things that are going on today?
Yeah, well, one thing I love seeing, Neil, is how the local church in many parts of the world is beginning to step up for orphans in their region in new and fresh ways. This has always been a part of a healthy church any part of the world, but I think we're seeing a resurgence of that both in the U.S. and now around the world increasingly. So I was in Ukraine not too long ago, and I went to this church where there was the church probably only had, I'd guess, 700, 800 people on an average Sunday morning, but they have adopted more than 100 children from the local orphanages and saying, these kids, some of them who have deep hurts and wounds, but we as a church community, we are going to take a primary responsibility for giving them families. And it is beautiful to see the way the whole church community now is a part of that vision. Even those who aren't adopting are saying, we have a role to play. We're going to support these families, help them financially, help them, with their errands or doing favors or fixing their roof when it's leaking. So there's this beautiful community aspect to it. And, one story that was actually told to me while I was there is a man told me how when he had grown up as a boy, behind the Iron Curtain in those days, actually the government would sometimes, when they would see a Christian family, they would actually take their biological children away from them if they were considered too Christian or too religious, and put them in state-run orphanages because the government thought that was better for those kids, to take them away from the Christian families. And today, the government of Ukraine is actually going to Christian churches and families and saying, will you please take more children from the orphanages into your families? And so it's just beautiful, Neil, to see in one generation a flip from taking children away from Christian families and putting them in orphanages to today taking children out of orphanages and asking more Christian families to receive those children.
I assume that perhaps local churches becoming more engaged is even more critical, as it seems like political decisions limit maybe international adoption, some of those things, right? So, I mean, the restrictions have increased in some of those areas, right?
That's right. So, you know, what we see in the international adoption realm is there's still a great many children who desperately need families. And on the other side of the ocean, there's a lot of families who are willing to receive them through adoption. And yet the narrow bridge between the two that we call intercountry adoption or international adoption has become so constricted that a lot of those kids can't find families overseas. And, there's some good reasons for that, some healthy protections against unethical adoption practices, but also some very bad reasons for that, that result in kids growing up in orphanages and on the streets without families. And so it is the local church in some of these places that has to step up if these kids are ever going to know love and nurture.
And is it we talked about the foster care system in the U.S., the 1,000 of those 400,000 in the system sort of ready and waiting for adoption. Is it that same sort of percentage maybe globally in terms of the global church in country to country?
You know, it varies greatly by country, and there's different factors. So in some places, civil war might play a much larger role in the creation of new orphans. In other places, HIV/AIDS is a major driver. So it varies greatly. But particularly in Africa and in Asia and then in some parts of Latin America, there are very large numbers of orphans where the kind of more traditional extended family safety net is so frayed that there is not the capacity to absorb these kids. And so there's really a need for people, who are not relatives, who don't have what you would call a genetic interest in these children, to step up and say, while my genetics may not make me interested, the fact that God the Father loved me first in this way compels me to love these children in like manner.
We're going to talk more about, that we all have a role to play, and there's some great opportunities for us to be about God's heart in caring for orphans and consider adoption and foster care. And we're getting good insight, as always, from Jed Medefin, who journeys life with his wife, Rachel, and wrestling matches with their five children. And he also serves as the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Prior to that, he served in the White House under President George W. Bush in the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. And he's authored four books. The Christian Alliance for Orphans has their yearly summit in Nashville later this week. CAFO2015.org is the address, the web address, to get more information on that and just to get connected with their great work. We're going to talk more with Jed in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we're happy to spend some time today talking with Jed Medefin. Going on later this week in Nashville, thousands of Christians and people that have a sense of God's call about caring for orphans and widows in their distress, gathering for a summit. It's the Christian Alliance for Orphans Summit 2015, going on in Nashville. You can find out more at CAFO2015.org. Jed Medefin is the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. We've talked with him in the past. He has a background experience in the political world, both in the California state legislature and also served in the White House under President George W. Bush in the faith-based and community initiatives. He's authored several books. We want to talk a little bit about some of the systematic and maybe political leanings and the ways that we can see involvement there as well. But at the heart of it comes, our response to God's call to care for the weak and the vulnerable. And that's what we're talking about today. And Jed, we're hearing some stories about, you know, some of the hopeful things that are going on, that certainly globally in terms of orphan care. I mean, there have been some, you know, challenging adoption, maybe international adoptions that have raised, gotten news coverage. So, I mean, how do we maybe address those and not, you know, obviously those are maybe exceptions and not the rule, but how do we respond maybe to critics about this whole process?
Yeah. Well, Neil, I feel like it's always first so wise to begin by listening, you know, and so if there's a critic who's saying, I don't like this about adoption systems in general, or I don't like this about how Christians are approaching this, you know, there's always something to learn in the process, even if the critic may be very misguided or have their own motives in it, you know, to listen first. And so, for instance, you know, one critique that I think is very warranted is that, you know, you go back 7, 8, 10 years, and when Christians sometimes would talk about adoption, when there was just this building excitement and energy for adoption, you had sometimes what I call adoption cheerleading, where people would just say, it's beautiful, it's so good, it's redemptive, it helps children. And that is all true. You know, that's part of the truth we need to reveal and to show. But then there's also the part of it that, you know, adoption mirrors the gospel story both in its beauty and in its costliness. So, you know, the gospel story is of God pursuing us at great cost to himself, of giving himself to love us, to draw us into his family. And so when if we're choosing to adopt, if we're choosing to bring children into our home through foster care, we need to know that these children, many of them have experienced deep hurt. And if we welcome them into our lives, we are welcoming in a measure of hurt, and walking with those children through that, helping them towards healing, can be a very difficult process. And so we need to talk about that reality up front as well, just like the Psalms always do, talking about both the beauty, the glory of God's creation and goodness of God, and of the dark moments, the questions, the struggles that come in a broken world. The adoption movement and the orphan care movement, we need to talk about those hard questions and the hard things, as well as the great beauty of this journey.
You know, you mentioned in a previous segment, talking a little bit about an example in Ukraine, back behind in the communist days, that Christian families were maybe targeted, their children taken away. That has changed now. But I wonder, you know, it seems like the political, the cultural, certainly spiritual climate, it seems, has changed pretty dramatically in the United States over these last even months. Do you see issues for committed Christians wanting to adopt or be in foster care having some maybe limitations or barriers to overcome because of their religious faith?
That definitely is something that is possible. And in fact, we have some stories where, you know, social workers with a particular worldview have you know, tried to exclude Christian families from adopting or fostering because of that. I would say that's very much the exception. I think where we do see some more political challenges is with agencies, Christian agencies that are serving children motivated by their faith, having limitations on their ability to serve in the way that they feel is consistent with Scripture. And so that right now is where some of the real questions and challenges are. I think for the most part, you know, on an individual level, when Christians come forward and say, we want to help, and they have a humble stance in that, you know, we want to be respectful of the rules of the state, but we really want to love these kids who, in many cases, no one else is willing to step forward and love. The vast majority of the social workers and the vast majority of the county and state systems say, we would love to partner with you and serve those kids together.
Having served in the government at both the state and the federal level, do you have a sense of maybe the passion or interest among our civic leaders about this issue of taking care of orphans, adoption, foster care? Do you see systematic changes taking place at all?
Well, you really do see some real champions in both federal and state governments for kids that don't have a voice. And it's and so that is encouraging. And just like a cross section of American populist life, you know, you've got people who are just going about their lives and really caring about just their own interests, and then others, and it includes among political leaders, who really, really care about kids. And of course, in many cases, those are individuals that are motivated by their faith. They know it's something God cares about. They want to reflect that in how they lead and govern as a governor or a legislator. And so it's just exciting to see, you know, we've had some of these folks speak at Summit over the past many years, and just really, as some of them have getting to know them, just see a real deep love for kids and a desire to continually be refining and revising government so that it can more effectively serve these kids. Now I think, you know, we have to be realistic. Government is not going to meet the deepest needs of a child. The child needs love and protection and nurture, and that can only happen in the context of loving relationship. And so, again, like we talked about earlier, the church has to be at the center of that. By necessity, we can't leave it to government to solve the needs. But good government really can make a difference in terms of protecting kids from harm and setting up systems that enable families and churches and communities to wrap around these kids in healthy ways.
If you were advocating for maybe for one change in the system, however you define that, what would that be? Or what could we engage in? And so there's a role for all of us to play, but maybe if someone that's passionate about this, what are some of the maybe the primary areas where a simplifying or in some other way changing would change the plight of orphans?
Well, you know, in the U.S., I think one of the biggest things is just that this is not usually driven by law so much as it is by the choices of the both the elected officials and then the unelected permanent group of social servants. There is that there'd be a desire and a willingness to work with churches and I would say very much other civic organizations, but really, if you are speaking realistically about where you're going to find the most energy and willingness to sacrificially love children from difficult places, it's going to be especially in churches. That's it's verified by research, and Barna research showed that Christians are actually twice as likely to adopt from the foster system as people with no religious affiliation. And so you really see this is strategically where you're going to find your allies. And in some states, we're seeing that where the county or state is saying, we recognize these are strategic allies. And so apart from any kind of religious interest, we are open to working with them. We're going to try to learn their language, and we hope that they will learn ours, and we're going to partner to serve kids together. And, often with no exchange of money, so we don't have any of the constitutional limitations or things, but there's a genuine partnership going on, and that is really exciting to see.
Jed, you were sharing in the last half hour about just some hopeful stories out of Ukraine. Let's talk about maybe nationally hopeful stories within the church and in communities where foster care and adoption is taking place maybe in a significant way. What comes to mind when you think about some of the real hopeful signs that you see in here?
Yeah, and Neil, there really are some encouraging things. You know, across the U.S., as churches are stepping up and in some cases, whole regions where networks of churches are stepping up and saying, we're going to do this together. And so, for instance, in Colorado, we've actually seen the number of children waiting to be adopted cut by less than half over the last 5 years as Christian churches, networks of Christian churches, as well as nonprofits like Project 127 and Focus on the Family and others have really championed this vision. The church has stepped up. And so, you know, these are a significant drop, cut by more than half the number of kids waiting to be adopted. And we see similar things beginning to emerge in many other parts of the country. DC 127 is doing similar things in the Washington, D.C. area. We have the Call of Arkansas that bringing families and churches together with kids in the foster system, fostering, adopting, mentoring. And I could go on and on, list many different places as well in Atlanta and in Portland and other places where the church is really stepping up. And I think just what it is re-earning the historic reputation of the church as a people who give special care for the orphan.
And you kind of alluded to the fact, too, that it's even though one church can make a difference if several partner together in a community, in a region, in a state, that truly can have a multiplying impact, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is, you know, that is the vision that we always seek to cultivate and encourage. There's something that is part of the Christian Alliance for Orphans vision, which is called the National Foster Care Initiative. And really our goal is to work with individuals around the country that want to grow what we call foster care movements in their region, where it's not just one individual or one church, but it's a network of churches working together to grow a true movement of the church stepping up for kids in foster care.
All right, we'll talk more about what that can look like. And as Jed has mentioned, you know, we all have a role to play in this as we talk about orphan care, adoption, foster care, some of these wonderful initiatives. We're going to hear more from Jed Medefin in just a moment. Jed's the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, and he's an author. He served in several posts in the California State Legislature and also served in the White House as Special Assistant to President George W. Bush, leading the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. And we're getting great insight today on God's heart for the weak and the orphan. And we'll get more from Jed in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and my guest today, Jed Medefin, who's president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. We wanted to connect with Jed just before he leads the Christian Alliance for Orphans Summit. It goes on in Nashville here later this week. It's CAFO2015.org. That's the web address to find out more about it, and a couple of the sessions will be live. And so if you aren't able to attend in Nashville, you can at least be a part of that. We're talking a little bit about, you know, adoption, orphan care, the National Foster Care Initiative. Jed, I recall seeing or maybe hearing a statistic suggested that a fair number of today's homeless population in the U.S. is made up of foster kids who are graduated out of the system without finding a permanent home. Talk a little bit more about those 400,000 in the foster care system.
Yeah. Well, Neil, you know, the statistics of children who have grown up in foster care, who have graduated, or as we call, aged out into adulthood without having been adopted, by their mid-20s, they are really, really struggling. As you mentioned, the homelessness is very rampant. Less than half are employed. Of the women, nearly 70% are on public assistance. Of the men, 64% have been arrested as adults. And so, you know, and it's just the simple reality that God made the family for children. And without that, when you strip that away, all of those intangibles, kids begin to struggle. And then as they go into adulthood, you know, I've heard this from several different young adults who grew up in foster care. They say you never outgrow a need for a family. Just imagine, you know, it's Thanksgiving and all your friends are going home to their families, but you grew up in foster care and maybe none of those foster families you lived with really care about you now. And so you have nowhere to go for Thanksgiving. And so that's why there is such struggle in this population. And that's why it's so significant when Christians say, you know, we are going to be God's family for these kids. Like it says in Psalm 68, that God sets the lonely in families. And so that's what he is calling us to do, is to be that, to whether that's Thanksgiving, inviting a foster youth or former foster youth to be a part of our family, or for something long term, permanently through adoption.
Is the, you know, for those that haven't ever maybe even considered the foster system, give us a little thumbnail. What do we need to know, and what would it take for someone to really honestly consider that and get involved?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, of course, anytime you wade into government, whether it's the DMV or anything else, there's going to be headaches, and all the more so when you have a system that in a very, you know, important way is designed to protect children. It's not there to serve foster parents. And sometimes you feel that keenly. You're getting in there to try to help, but you feel like this system is not designed to make that easy for you. And I would add that warning first, but that's part of the call. I think it's part of the sacrifice of coming near to children who really need us. And so, you know, there's almost in every community in America, there are local nonprofits as well as the county, depending on the way the system is designed, that you can approach and say, hey, I'm interested in learning more. And I would also really encourage that, you know, if you're in a church, that you seek out others in your church community who have walked that road, so they can tell you, hey, this part is really hard, or hey, this part you're going to need some extra help. Because it's not a road to be walked alone. I think it's one that God intends for us to walk as part of a Christian community. And so start there, you know, talking with those who walked the road before, reaching out to a local agency. In many cases, there's great Christian agencies that are in that area that can begin preparing you to whether you ultimately decide your role is to adopt, whether it's to foster, whether it's to be a mentor, or possibly just to be a support for other families that are fostering and maybe they need a weekend respite, and you become the approved babysitter, and to give families a break. There's a role for all of us in this.
Say a little bit more about that. You mentioned mentoring. What does that look like? Is that like kind of the idea of a big brother, big sister kind of thing?
That's right. So let me tell a story about a friend. I don't know her well, but a young woman that I spent some time with several years ago named Che. She grew up in the foster system in Tennessee. And I remember her describing to me how she she got her first job in her late teens, and she got an old car that could drive her to and from work. And she was faithfully showing up at work on time, all these things. But one day she was driving home from work. Her car started smoking. She pulled over the side of the freeway. It went up in flames. The whole engine block melted down. And she kind of told me with a half laugh, she said, I knew you had to put gasoline into the car, but no one had ever told me about needing to add oil. And it was, she was kind of making a joke, and it was sweet, it was funny, but it was also the sad reality of if you're growing up outside of the family, there's so many little things like changing the oil, adding oil, that you don't learn. And so, if we're willing to step up and say, I'm willing to be a consistent presence in the lives of these kids, just to share little things like that. Help them apply for college, help them think through what their priorities are, help them decide if they, how they negotiate a complex relationship. That type of relationship, whether it's in a more formalized structure through a formalized mentoring program, or possibly if there's just, a young person in your church that is in that situation and kind of coming alongside them, it can make such a difference.
Is there maybe an age that's most in need for, in terms of foster family or adoption or maybe ethnic group or location or any of those things? Can we narrow it down some?
Yeah. Well, there's of course need across the spectrum from newborn through age 18, and every race is represented in the system. You would say that it's often harder to find families for kids who are part of sibling groups. So, when there's two brothers or sisters or perhaps more, children with special needs that perhaps have some form of special need, or kids that are older. It's just, it feels much easier to bring in a child who's a year or two old versus a 13 or 14-year-old that perhaps has had deep hurts in their lives. And so for those families that feel like they could take on one of those more challenging cases, for sibling group, for children with special needs, for kids that are older, there is a special degree of need there for families willing to embrace those kids.
One of the things you'd referred to earlier was about, that we would effectively act. Talk a little bit about, I know the Christian Alliance for Orphans, it's an alliance of dozens, I guess maybe over 100, right, of various ministries. Maybe talk about some of the uniquenesses of some of those ministries and how they're all working to be more effective. And what does effectiveness look like?
Yeah. Well, let me give one example. If you go back 50, 100 years and you asked anyone, if there's a bunch of orphans, what can we do to help them? The immediate response was, well, build an orphanage. Let's build this huge facility that can house 200, 300 kids. And still some of us kind of go naturally in that direction. And what we realize, while that may be efficient in terms of providing shelter and food for a lot of kids, that to really thrive, a child needs personal relationship. And so as an alliance, what we're trying to do is say, while at times there's really is a need for some of these more orphanage protections that can get kids off the street, provide shelter, that ultimately we need to get as close to the ideal of family as possible. So when that looks like local adoptions, or when there's a possibility of reunifying children safely with their family of origin, then that needs to be a priority for us. And when that's not possible, we need to try to shift from these large-scale institutions into small homes that feel much more like a family, where there's a consistent relationship between a caregiver, or ideally both a male and a female caregiver, that are consistently in children's lives over months and years. And so that's one facet of effectiveness, is over time moving as close as possible to the ideal of family. And there's many other facets to this as well, but that would be one example of what we as a community of the organizations within the Alliance are trying to do together.
Again, their summit coming up here in just a few days, and you can find out more, not only about the summit, but about being connected and get plugged in. CAFO, standing for the Christian Alliance for Orphans, CAFO2015.org is the website. Jed Medefin is president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Jed, I think we sort of alluded to it earlier, but is the fight against injustice of the weak and vulnerable, particularly as it relates to orphans, is it sort of become fashionable, and does that lead to some possible maybe missteps?
That's a great question, Neil. You know, I think so. I think that it's certainly not a bad thing when virtue is popular. You know, that's a good thing, and you want people to seek good things, and that would be something that would be broadly encouraged and praised. And so, you know, at its heart, the fact that there's a lot more Christians paying attention to the needs of orphans, to the needs of foster youth, getting involved, that's positive. But of course, there's always the danger that it could be just a fad, or that people do just because they want to do something that kind of seems hip at the time. And that's why, Neil, as we were talking about earlier, we always want to root this vision in the gospel. This isn't just kind of a cool social justice ministry. This is ultimately about the fact that we have been so deeply loved by the Father that he pursued us when we were destitute and alone. He invites us into his family. We live as his sons and daughters and call him Abba. That's the wellspring of it all. We're not doing this because it's hip. It's not because we feel guilty. It's not because we have a sense of duty. It's not idealism to solve the world's problems. We love because he first loved us. And when we keep ourselves rooted there, it guards us against both the trendiness as well as the hubris that often comes when we just want to be a part of a good cause.
Jed, we've touched on, and you've mentioned a couple times, but it's worth reviewing, I think, there's a role for all of us to play in orphan care, adoption, foster care. When you have the opportunity to say, well, here's my sort of my bucket list of things that, maybe we haven't thought of. Let's just review that for a minute or two.
Yeah. Well, and that's such a key point, Neil. Just to reiterate, not every Christian is called to adopt. Not every Christian is called to foster or to mentor. But every Christian community is called to live out the pure religion that James describes as including care for orphans and widows in their distress. And there really is a role for all of us in this. And so, for instance, for my own journey, when my wife and I were adopting, our church community came around us. There were a number of people that actually helped us with the financial costs of that, which we would not have been able to cover ourselves. When we brought our daughter home, it was like there was a church celebration, just like we had had a baby, and that was so affirming. And then there was a woman in the church, Lorraine Withers, who was retired, who for 2 years did all of our grocery shopping for us to help us through that. Through some of the ups and downs of that journey, it just felt like, hey, someone is with us in this. There are actually many who are with us in it, and that means the world to foster and adoptive parents, whether that's people that come over and do errands, whether it's people that babysit, whether it's even things that seem strange. Like, for instance, I know an orthodontist in Colorado who provides free orthodontic care to families that have fostered and adopted. What a beautiful sense of him using his gifts to bless and encourage those families.
As you say, love for orphans transforms it, and transforms not only the families involved, but those that come alongside in the auxiliary support as well, right?
Absolutely. And I love that phrase, because I see it true again and again, Neil, that love for orphans transforms. When we choose to love both as individuals, as families, as churches, it not only changes the life of a child, but it changes us to come to grasp more deeply the heart of our Father God, of how he has loved us. It stretches our faith. It grows community as we walk this road together. And then ultimately, it shows a watching world God's heart like maybe nothing else ever can.
I always appreciate the challenge and the encouragement from Jed Medefin, who serves as president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans. He's authored several books, including Upended and Four Souls and Becoming Home. And I want to encourage you to find out more. You can go to the website to find out about their summit coming up here at the end of the week, CAFO2015.org. Jed, blessings to you and continued guidance and wisdom as you lead this important work.
Thanks so much, Neil. It's great to spend this time with you.
You've been listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Staven.